invite you to pray with me. Oh Lord, may the words of my mouth, the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, our strength and our redeemer. So a little while ago now, the state of Nebraska unveiled its new state slogan, and it was done with a lot of fanfare. The new state slogan for tourism in Nebraska is, Nebraska, honestly, it's not for everybody. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek. I mean, there's a huge amount of self-awareness to it. Who has been to Nebraska? Oh, look at that. Great, great. Has anyone ever lived in Nebraska? Okay. My folks lived in Nebraska. Now, they moved to Omaha in 1983, and God knows why. In the Chicago area. And when they moved, it was really hard on me because here I was in New Jersey with my family, and to go visit them, we had to go to Omaha, and I missed going back home where I'd grown up, where my friends were, and I could visit them, where the church was that I grew up in. I couldn't make all those connections any longer. We didn't know anything about Omaha except my parents live there, so it's a little difficult. Now, I have nothing against the good people in Nebraska, and I know there are many, many good people there, but it's not for everyone. There's a whole lot going on. A lot of flat land going on. A lot of cornfields going on. If you like college football, Nebraska is a great place to be. They have that rip-roaring team called Cornhuskers. Cornhuskers. It's a football team, the Cornhuskers. I mean, there's a lot of speed there, right? But if it's all of that is for you, go for it. If the great state of Nebraska fits where you are at, then I think it should be up there on your list of destinations, of course. They do have decent steak. And that was one of the perks of my parents living in Nebraska, because every year at Christmas time, guess what we got from them? Omaha steaks. So that was fun. That was really good. So, left it. I mentioned this really interesting bit of trivia about Nebraska because there is actually just kind of a charm, I think, to it. I mean, they're so honest about who they are, forthright, refreshing. They put out there the simple, unadorned truth, right? There's no glossing over it. There's no hype. There's no embellishment. There's no grandstanding here. There's no glorification or idealization. There's no need to convince anyone that they are incredibly wonderful beyond wonderful. It's just Nebraska offering up the bare bones of reality with a wink and a nod. And there's just something heartwarming, I think, about that. Idealizing anything trips us up, right? And that's what I want to talk about this morning. You know, we get pictures in our heads of perfect images, whatever it is. I mean, you name it, you've all been there. And then when you have an authentic lived-out experience and it doesn't quite meet that perfect image, there's this feeling of letdown. There's this feeling of disappointment. It just didn't measure up to your expectations. And maybe we get a little resentful sometimes. Maybe we get a little confused. Maybe we're just overwhelmed by what we didn't expect to be the case. There is such idealization all around. look very far. Take Facebook, right? How many posts of pictures are put up on Facebook that are put out there to give out a certain image, carefully choreographed, carefully staged? The point of it all is, isn't my life wonderful, or isn't this great experience I had wonderful? And you know, life isn't all wonderful for the individual. I recently saw something, I guess it was on Facebook, it was referred to, I think, in a commentary about this, and it was a young woman. She took a picture of herself, and in the background you see a lot of woods. You know, it's very woodsy, and the caption or the comment about it was, "Oh, I decided to get back into nature and go for a hike." Her sister posted on that picture a comment that gave a whole nother view. She had taken a picture of her sister with the woods in the background. It was actually, she was standing in her backyard. And it was like, you know, really, really, I'm sure that they had a little bit of a time after that. I don't want to go there. So you go to supermarkets, and you stand at the checkout line, and you see the magazine covers of all of these beautiful, gorgeous celebrities. What you see is a lot of airbrushing going on. I mean, Oprah, does she really look like that cover of her magazine in real life? Is that really, really Oprah? What about the food? When you see a recipe and then you see a picture of what the food is supposed to look like, all of that is done by food stylists. We know that. A little shoe polish here, a little paste there. Wet paper towels are put into things to pump them up. How So I think we do need help now and again in reminding ourselves that the honest to goodness realness of this journey we call life is what we are all about. And acknowledging that life isn't something that can be prettied up so easily or gentrified or made out to be all bright and shiny. And it's into that world that Jesus came, right? Into that world that Jesus came. The incarnation. It's all about the realness of God meeting with and dwelling with the realness of what is. And especially when that realness feels so far different from some mental image of perfection that we might have, and when we prefer to hold on to that with great, great longing. So fascinating to me that our Old Testament passage is from 2 Samuel. And I think this brings all of this to light in a very unexpected way. What we have are purportedly the last words of David, King David. And I want you to notice something very specific here. Here David is pictured as larger than life. David, the leader of incomparable grandeur. As the scholar Carlos Zumala says, David came to be viewed as Israel's greatest king, unsurpassed in the eyes of God and humans. And David, in this poem, he goes on to proclaim that he is the one who God spoke through, who is to rule justly, quote, like the sun on a morning without clouds. Clouds, just clear. And David goes as far as to say here about himself, "Will God not cause to blossom my success and everything I desire?" What's so interesting is there are actually 10 versions of the last words of David in the Hebrew scriptures. So David was lifted up just by virtue of that fact, we know. And he was lifted up in this, as a shining memory, you know, in Israel's past, and a vision of what Israel's future could look like. His many last words, they attest to biographers calling attention to him to keep his greatness alive, especially in the present, and then to project that into the future in a particular way. The thing is, you and I know that this more than practically perfect in every way picture of David doesn't really square altogether with the reality of some other things we know about him. From this set of last words, one would think that he never went through some of the sordid difficulties of his life that he actually went through. David, what about his accosting of the married Bathsheba? And then he has her husband killed to cover up his actions? Well, that's outstanding. And what about when he ignored the rape of his daughter Tamar? It was done by her half-brother Amnon. And it resulted then that there was this war that David had with his son Absalom, and that actually almost ended his reign. I mean, these are just a few of, quote, David's lapses of judgment. And didn't Jesus say, we will know people by their fruit? In grief recovery work, there is this really helpful term, and it's called entrainment. Entrainment. Entrainment has to do with the tendency people have to enshrine their loved one who has passed away. That is, preferring to only see that person in really saintly ways. You know, the memories just have this golden glow about them. The person never did anything at all wrong, that kind of thing. And I think that word fits for what it's easy to do with memories, enshrinement. It's easy to do that with some past experiences, because maybe we long for a golden age of the past. I mean, we compare today, what has gone on before, and then today always comes up feeling, you know, like it's wanting or lacking. Churches, we do this all the time. I'll speak for Wilson Memorial. One of the things that gives me pause at my church is, in our Sunday school wing, we have these wonderful, old, historic, beautiful pictures of what the Sunday school was like years ago. And they're black and white pictures, large photographs. And you just see, you know, children spilling out all over the place. And you walk by that and think, wow, that certainly isn't the reality today. And there's this longing for a golden past, which just kind of keeps coming up with inside of me, actually, and inside other people. And wasn't it great back then, that kind of thing? Well, what happens then? What happens with the present? We're not living in the present. We're not seeing the potential then in the present, in the here and now. Jesus, I mean, he was right there in the messiness of the life of people. Right there in the disappointment, in the brokenness, in the hurt, in the hard stuff, in the struggle. Wasn't Jesus there time after time within the raw pain of human experience? For this reason, there's just this, I think, wonderful grittiness to the gospel. It truly is. It's stunning. It's stunning. And so what we have in the Gospels is hardly a grand and idyllic picture of the world that Jesus came to live in. And And so holding on to any glossy image of what things are supposed to be like, it's kind of holding on to a grand cover-up. It truly is. And for Jesus himself, life wasn't all sweetness and light. The cross, remember the cross? That just bears witness to stark, jarring evidence that things were pretty tough. We are invited to know God within the truth of the hard and the complicated, not absent from all of that. I don't know if you know Mark Nepo. I suggest him to you. He has written poetry. He has devotional books out there. He has this wonderful poetic prose way of writing as well. He has written a lot, and one of the things he talks about in one of his books, I can't remember what it was about a friend of his who was actually a photographer. And this photographer no longer took pictures for a reason. So when he asked his photographer friend, well, why aren't you taking pictures with your camera any longer? He said, oh, no, that was what I did a long time ago, 30 years ago, in fact. You see, what happened was, I was once in Vermont. I was in the woods in the autumn getting close to what the time of year is going to be for us. So we can just picture how beautiful this sounds. He was in the woods in the autumn, and the light, he said, and the foliage, they were just magical. And he roamed for hours with his camera, taking picture after picture. He said he just relished the experience. Time seemed to open up for him as he stood in utter amazement in front of patches of color. Frame after frame he took, he knew they would just... all those pictures would glow with the mystical edge that he was experiencing. Later, when he had his camera, he opened it up to take out the film. That was back in the days when people used real film. He noticed something. He noticed that when he had put his film in his camera, he hadn't really caught the sprocket in it, so the film never advanced at all. So he ended up not having any pictures of this beautiful experience. The perfection that he longed to capture wasn't captured. He realized then that his time just being in nature was a far more complete experience than trying to capture all of those pictures and having them as only memories. And to me, this is... a parable of sorts. We can long to capture perfection, but it will always elude our grasp. And even when we do have those moments that we feel like, oh, this is just a perfect moment, moment of unbelievable beauty, they do happen, you know? Or a moment of just love that fills your heart almost to bursting, those happen. But we can never completely capture any of them. We can't freeze time. But what we can do is live those moments fully in the here and in the now. And not take any of them for granted. You know? And truly see God in the midst of those moments. The last thing I want to say is this. When we seek after some form of ideal perfection, we set ourselves up for disappointment. So, I woke up in the middle of the night, last night, to a text from Tom. Now, there is this wonderful app, and I didn't know about it until daughter-in-law Nancy put it on all of our phones for it. It's called WhatsApp, and it's a way that you can actually text somebody when they're overseas on a trip. It's like
you know, you can communicate as much as you want. It's just great. You can send pictures over it. It's been a fantastic way to connect. So we've all used this wonderful app. But here I'm getting this text. I don't know if it was like 3 a.m. or what it was. It was something like that. Really? Doesn't he know about the time difference between Scotland and New Jersey? That's okay, but I was a little concerned, of course. I thought, oh no, something's wrong, something's happened. So immediately, you know, I have to read the text. Here is what he wrote in that text, and this is a verbatim quote. Too windy for the ferry to Orkney Islands. I wanted to see the Stone Age ring of Brogan. Anyone been there? The Stone Age ring of Brogan. I guess it's like Stonehenge. You know, you have the stones in a circle, and it's a wonderful, historic, beautiful sight. And it just feels like you're back in the Stone Age when you can actually see it. So he wanted to see that particular ring of stones, Orkney Islands. Didn't happen. He said, so we're going to another castle. That's a disappointment. How often in life do you have opportunities? I mean, to see something actually from the Stone Age to be right there, and then all of a sudden, because of this particular time for his trip and the wind and the weather, it's too much for the ferry to get there. It's called off, and you cannot do what you want. So, in fact, I think disappointment was actually written all over that text. And how many of you have traveled? And you've wanted to see certain things, and, you know, things happened out of your control. Opportunities pass you by. Never to be repeated, the opportunity. But that's called life, right? That's called life. There's no perfection in this life. Remember, there is only one form of perfection that we are even called to, and that is the perfection of love. Jesus said, every good tree bears good fruit. We are simply to be known by our fruit. He said, you will know others by their fruit. We can infer that we are to let ourselves be known by our fruit. The only perfect thing is love. Thanks be to God for God's word.